Yes, good morning, and it's Roy Lowy, and I'm welcoming you to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network. My guests today are Mr. Evan Eggers, president of O2Cruise.com, the Internet's cruise superstore with his latest on the cruise scene. Brenda Guggenhagen, director of public information and community relations at Tampa Airport, will be with us. Travel journalist Peter Flaherty, and travel journalist Suzanne Wright, and Mr. Johnny Jett. Evan Eggers, president of O2Cruise.com, is on the phone. Good morning, Evan.
Good morning, Roy.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, staying out of trouble.
Well, I mean, but you must be the only one, because on the cruise scene, they aren't staying out of trouble.
No, that's for sure. Now, I guess it was good and bad news this week for the cruise industry, of course. I know what you're referring to is the pirate attack that occurred to the Seabourn Spirit, which is bad news. The good news, of course, is the attack was fended off, and no passengers were injured, and one crew member had a slight injury. So it could have been worse. Certainly not news we want to hear, though.
It was something like right out of a movie.
It really was. I mean, it is. It's, you know, 5:30 a.m. passengers are awoken to the sound of gunfire outside. The ship takes evasive action, uses some high-tech acoustic weaponry and fire hoses to fend off the pirates. They chase them around for almost 90 minutes. And in the end, they get away. It really is. You couldn't make a better movie script.
It's amazing because, since the attack on the coal, I guess they have put some security measures in place, but one just wonders how effective they are. But I guess they have this high, ear-splitting, high-tech weapon that they used, which they're not saying too much about, obviously.
Yeah, I live in New Hampshire. It's engineered by a company that's based on the West Coast, but their research and development facility is in Maine. It's called an LRAD, long-range acoustic device, and it was originally developed for the military as a non-lethal weapon. It can be used for a couple of things. One is, and this is actually why Seabourn put it on board, is so that they could beam a message to, let's say, a passenger craft up to 300 feet away
right.
in a very narrow beam and just tell them, hey, steer clear of us, just for people who are getting too close. That's the real reason they got it. But then the secondary usage is what the military has bought it for and what Seabourn used it for in this case, which is to send a sound wave that sounds like a smoke detector but is about 100 times as loud to really dissuade people from doing anything.
Now, the ship is going to go into the Seychelles, I think, are they not?
Yeah, that's right. That's where they dock. That's where they dock. They're moving off. They're resuming their previously scheduled itineraries.
And they're going to, fly the people into Kenya and then back to their regular home destinations, I guess.
Yeah, that's my understanding. That's my understanding.
Now, I understand the ship was carrying 151 passengers and 161 crew. That's kind of interesting. That's a very nice number. If you've got more crew than you do passengers, that obviously the service must be pretty good on that ship.
Well, yeah. I mean, Seabourn is an ultra-luxury line. They've got a great reputation, and they're beautiful ships, too. I mean, they're just gorgeous. From everything, it's interesting because normally, the media loves to find bad news about big companies, whether it's in the travel industry or not. And so, of course, they were all talking to the passengers when they disembarked. But the passengers who were on board this vessel were uniformly positive about the way the cruise line handled it and very upbeat. They said that all the passengers who were on board couldn't have been happier about how the whole situation really transpired, which was interesting.
Yeah, well, I guess with high-pressure hoses and those sort of things, a lot better than a bunch of crew standing on the deck firing automatic weapons or something. That could get kind of messy, couldn't it?
Well, that's right. That's interesting. The industry, Seabourn in particular, and the International Council of Cruise Lines, what they'll say is that cruise liners are authorized under international law to carry weapons on board, but they won't say whether any ships actually do. So that question has been remained open. The question is whether they actually had weapons on board this vessel and didn't need to break them out or whether they didn't, and understandably they're not saying. All the cruise lines were required under federal law some time ago to come up with ship safety and security plans to deal with contingencies just like this. And that was actually initially born out of the Achille Lauro hijacking way back in 1985 in the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
And after September 11th, of course, those plans were really put into place and solidified, and that has served Seabourn well today, no doubt. And, in fact, it's interesting. The manufacturer of that long-range acoustic device says, as far as they know, Seabourn is the only line that has those devices on board. So
Well, I guess some of the others should be looking at them pretty soon. Maybe we'll buy some stock in that company.
Yeah. they have said they're being swamped by phone calls. No surprise there.
Yeah, I would think so. But anyway, well,
for people...
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. No, I mean, for people who might be listening, too, it's kind of interesting. I was on board the bridge of a Windstar vessel, which has an open bridge policy for the most part, years ago, and their maritime fax was just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling with reports of pirate attacks on merchant shipping around the world. And they said it's very common, but of course you never hear about it because it happens far away. And it's very, very rare. Well, I mean, the Achille Lauro was the last time in 1985 that anyone tried something like this with a cruise liner. And of course, Somalia, the coast of Somalia where the Seabourn Spirit was, is notorious because there's no effective government in that country for being an area where shipping interests of all types have to be very careful. So, you know, nobody should be too overly alarmed. This is not something we're going to be seeing in the Caribbean.
Well, that's the old story. All's well that ends well.
That's right, exactly.
Evan, thank you. We've got to run, and we'll be chatting with you next week. Thanks for
all right, Roy. Have a good day.
The update. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Totally gone major. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks. All-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally
want to
do it again.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're back, and we're going to be joined by a very interesting lady who's going to bring us up to date on what's happening at the Tampa airport. And it's kind of interesting because there's some very serious changes going on at Tampa airport. And that's going to affect us all somewhat. So Brenda Cohagan is with us, and she's Director of Public Relations and Community Director of Public Information and Community Relations at Tampa International Airport. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning, Roy. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us. And as I was just mentioning, there's some significant changes coming up here in the next few weeks. And one of them, of course, is that you've just opened your economy parking garage.
Yes. We're very excited. It's very timely. It's much needed. And it is open just in time for the holiday travel season. Of course, as we've talked before, it used to be we were seasonal, but no more. We are busy pretty much every month out of the year. But our new $71 million six-level economy parking garage has opened on the south side of the airport.
Yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Yesterday was the grand opening. We now have 3,300 spaces, and the beauty of this is they're covered spaces. People prefer to leave their vehicle covered. And the other good thing is it's the least expensive parking for us, $7 a day, and we have a new introductory offer. Your second day is free.
Oh, how long is that going to go on?
We don't know. It could be a year. It could be a couple of years. We're going to try it out because we want everybody to at least give it a try, try the new garage, and let us know what your experience is.
And, of course, the other garage, the long-term, is going up to $14 a day, I understand.
That's correct. That also happened yesterday. It was $10, and today it's $14. Now we have rebalanced the pricing on all of our parking facilities.
Now, I think probably the biggest question that everyone has, certainly I do, is how does one get from the new terminal, the new parking garage, to the terminal?
We have shuttle buses that operate from inside of the parking garage. Depending on which deck you park on, you simply walk to the elevator and take the elevator down to the ground floor, and that is the shuttle bus lobby. It's climate controlled, and that's where all the buses run, and typically they depart every 3 to 7 minutes. And we've done a time comparison for you to see if you're parking in the long-term garage, what's the difference if you're parking in our new economy garage. And honestly, they're pretty close.
Okay, now, so in other words, the difference, of course, is in the other garage, you take your bag out of your trunk and it's on its wheels or whatever, and you just roll it onto the elevators. Here you're going to actually have to take it, put it on a bus, and then take it off again. Is that correct?
That is correct, but the bus driver does hop off the shuttle bus to assist with bags. And in addition, in the long term, not only it's a bigger garage, so you're going to walk a lot, probably double the length of that space to get to the elevator, and then you have to hop on a monorail to get into the main terminal.
Yeah,
so there's still a ride, whether it's the shuttle bus or the monorail.
Right. Now, the thing of it is, of course, I suppose you could, if more than one person, you could drop your luggage off at curbside check-in,
absolutely,
then go back and park your car, which is another good option, I would guess.
Absolutely, and a lot of people do that. They like to do the curbside check-in, but again, as you mentioned, you can't do that if you're solo, so you really need to have another person traveling with you.
Too bad they couldn't do a garage check-in.
We make it pretty easy for you.
Well, that's good. I'm looking forward to, in fact, I'm at the airport quite frequently, so I'm looking forward to see how this is going to work, because there is another phase coming up, and that's going to happen on the 15th. And if we could just touch on that, because this really affects what's happening with the garage, is that you won't be able to wait at the curb for your people in those first two lanes as you could before.
Yes, and Roy, I'm glad you're asking me about this. There seems to be lots of confusion, and we would like to straighten it out for anyone. Our arrivals drive, where the meters and greeters come to pick up passengers, you absolutely still can use those arrival drives. We are not saying you can't use the arrival drives. That's what they're for, to pick up passengers. But because three times a day that area becomes a gridlock because we just have too many people sitting on the curb and waiting.
Yeah, we all know that for sure.
Yes, and what we call this is our curbside management program, and we're implementing it next Tuesday, the 15th. And what we're trying to accomplish here so that everybody has the opportunity to get up to the curb to pick up their passengers. It's very frustrating if the two lanes are blocked and you can't get over to get to your passengers. So what we're asking you to do, if your party has called you and they're on the curb and they're ready to load, by all means, get to the curb. If they're not, the flight's delayed, or for some reason there's a delay in them claiming their bags, and you have cell phones, which the majority of all people do nowadays, we have two new options for you. If for some reason your party's delayed, our number one choice is we have short-term parking right overhead, and we're going to give you 1 hour free. So you're welcome to go up to short-term park for 1 hour free and meet your party inside. You could also do long-term, but short-term is the easiest. Or we're opening a new cell phone wait lot, which is simply a place for you to go. It doesn't cost you anything, and you wait for your party to call you by cell phone to tell you, I'm on the curb, please come and get me.
Well, I think, so in other words, the first two lanes that people normally just parked and waited, whether they were there a half hour, 45 minutes, or longer, and of course the limousines were always there, that will still be the pickup area. The outer lanes will be the drive-through area. The difference is you're not going to be able and sit and wait.
That is the difference.
Right. But you can go to short-term for free for an hour. Now, I mean, that's more than reasonable. If it were 10 or 15 minutes, it could be problematic. But if you can park in short-term and there's a reasonable amount of parking for an hour free and then go and meet your person inside, it saves the people getting out of cars, going looking at the boards, going inside the terminal, coming back out. And I don't know. It's going to be an interesting experiment.
But as you know, we have record-breaking passenger traffic. We just finished 12 months, and we have 19 million passengers. We are growing leaps and bounds. We had double-digit record increases. This past September, we were up 23%, and that's usually our slowest month of the year. We have all the low-cost carriers operating out of Tampa, which drives the airfare down. We're like the fourth lowest airfare in the country for a one-way ticket at $131. So you can imagine why it's worth people to fly in and out of Tampa. But we have to give our customers options.
Right.
We want you to use the airport. It's a community airport. So coming up with this new cell phone wait lot is going to be great, and then providing 1 hour free. And we also like to advise customers, if you're picking up someone, please allow at least 20 minutes when they, because a lot of the passengers, as soon as they arrive and they touch down and the pilot says you can get on your electronics now so you can use your cell phone, they'll call and say, I'm here.
Right.
But it takes about 20 minutes for them to go through the process and actually get and claim their bag.
You're absolutely right. And there's one other there was one other point, and that was that this is taking place on the 15th.
Yes.
And that the parking area, the cell phone area, as you call it, is the area behind the post office. It's the first turnoff before you get to the post office. Is that correct?
It's actually the first exit as you enter the George Bean Parkway. It's the exit for the post office, the economy garage, and the cell phone wait lot. The first exit is the exit for everything.
Well, Brenda, I think I really appreciate you updating on updating us on this. And if there are any changes, we'll let our audience know.
Thank you,
and look forward to talking to you again.
Sounds great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Brenda from Tampa Airport, and it's pretty interesting news, because if you go out there, you better know what you're doing, because things are going to change, and we'll be updating you on that as soon as we can. Stay tuned. We're going to go to break.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, I'm back, and we are about to be joined by Mr. Peter Flaherty, who is going to take us on another destination worldview. And it's always a pleasure to chat with Peter. Good morning. How are you this morning, Peter?
Fine, thanks, Roy. Glad to be back.
We were just chatting a little bit on the phone, and if you just could try and speak up just a little bit louder.
Is that all right?
That's perfect.
Okay.
Peter, where are you going to take us today? I understand we're going to go to a wonderful spot in Spain.
Italy, actually.
Italy, yeah, right. I don't know.
The country is right.
It's been a long morning.
Yeah. I understand. No, we're going to Siena, which is a beautiful medieval city in Tuscany. I've come to know it quite well. I've been over there the past three summers for 2 weeks in July teaching a summer course to some Canadian high school seniors. There's a company here called Blythe Education that runs the courses, and so I'm working, but I'm also a tourist there, and it's just a beautiful city. There's so much to see. It's a medieval gem.
The gem of medieval Italian art and architecture.
Exactly.
And you also mentioned, which I think is interesting, that there's been a long-running rivalry between Siena and Florence dating back to medieval times, and that even continues to the present day. Is that correct?
Yes, it sure is. It's quite an interesting historical sidelight to the city. Most people are familiar with Florence. I think a number of people know Siena, too, but Siena, I think, always feels kind of in Florence's shadow. And if you go back to the Middle Ages, actually, Siena was politically even a more important city. Culturally, too, there's a long rivalry. Just give you one little kind of amusing story. Just before the Black Plague struck in the 14th century, Siena was planning a big renovation of its cathedral so that it would be bigger than Florence's. And the Florentines found out, and so the local legend goes, they arranged to have a cadaver infected with the plague thrown over the walls of Siena, which until that point had been free of the plague, to bring the poison to the city so they wouldn't be able to continue with the cathedral renovations, and apparently that stopped it.
How bizarre.
I don't know that's a true story, but it's sort of part of the local legend.
And a very bizarre story as well.
Yeah. They have rival football teams, you know, in Italy soccer is a national passion, and they have different, they back different sides in the Middle Ages, and it's just really amazing to me how history lives there, and everyone I met there is a local amateur historian with his or her own views of why their city is, should be even more important than it is, especially
and
compared to Florence.
Exactly, and you say the old town has been preserved in all its medieval and Renaissance glory, which is also interesting that they've been able to do that for so many years.
Yeah.
And there was another interesting note. There's a lot of them, but this one in particular, here where you talk about here logic is a lot different than you'd expect it to be anywhere else. I've found it in a lot of the countries. You have to think illogically.
Well, you have to think a little differently. The Sienese are certainly a breed, a special breed. They know what they have with their city. As I mentioned, Giancarlo is the chef at the hotel I stayed at. I got to know him quite well. He basically said that in Siena, you are a member of your contrada, your local neighborhood first, then you're a Sienese, then you're a Tuscan, and maybe fourth, and far least importantly, you're an Italian. So when you go there, you really have to kind of take the place as it is. They know what they have, they attract a lot of tourists, but they don't really bend over backwards to change their ways to suit the visitors. So when you go, it's really, you know, they say when in Rome, well, I think I would say when in Siena and multiply it maybe by 10 or even 100 and you'll have a good time.
That makes a lot of sense. And now, you say, well, it's possible to access parts of the city by car. The far best way to appreciate it is on foot. And
yes,
I found that true of many, many places. In fact, we're going to chat about that with Suzanne Wright when she did a little stroll through San Diego later on in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But walking through the city, kind of take us through that a little bit, if you will.
Well, the place you're going to start from, and that's really the most famous and deservedly most famous place in town, is the main square. It's called the Piazza del Campo, or just the Campo for short. It's not really a square, as I describe it in the article. It's sort of laid out in the form of a scallop shell, and it really dominates the town. And from there, you know, once you've seen it, and it's just a magnificent thing to see for the first time with all the buildings surrounding it and the big clock tower towering over the whole place. And that's, of course, where they run the famous Palio horse races every summer, which Siena is, like, world famous for.
Right.
If you start in the Campo, and you can really go out just about any way your fancy takes you. There's a number of little streets. You can walk up to the cathedral. You can walk down to other churches sort of at different ends of town. It's a bit confusing. You might be worried about getting lost, but really, I think, like Venice, it's a city where getting lost is half the fun, and it's so small that you can't really get too lost before you come across a landmark and are able to reorient yourself. But I really think that the best way to see it, to appreciate it, is not just to stay in the areas where Siena gets a lot. In the summer, Siena can get quite crowded with day tourists, and I really strongly recommend to people thinking of visiting that they give it a little more time and certainly see the important sites like the cathedral and the Campo, but get away from the beaten track and off into the little neighborhoods of the city and really appreciate the city the way it, you know, the way the people who live there do, and not just sort of get stuck in a tourist a rat race.
Now you mentioned that inside the Palazzo itself is the Civic Museum.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting museum. It's an important thing. In fact, it's still used for official purposes today. It's in what we would the Palazzo Pubblico, or we would call it the City Hall. Siena's had a very democratic municipal government, really dating back from the Middle Ages. And inside that museum, which is part of City Hall, you can see a number of beautiful frescoes. There's one I mentioned in the article in particular I found quite interesting. It's called The Effects of Good and Bad Government. And it's really kind of like a political propaganda piece, in a way, justifying and glorifying the kind of government that they once had and showing how good government can bring happiness and peace and prosperity to people. And on the other hand, bad government can lead to all kinds of vices and immorality and corruption and it's a lesson that's probably not lost on people today when they think about politics.
And once again, say that Siena was one of the most powerful, important urban centers in central Italy at that point.
Yes, it was. It really rose to fame in the Middle Ages because it was right on a major trade route linking Rome to into France, going up through the Alps, which are further north than Tuscany. And Siena really made its fame. I think the oldest bank, certainly the oldest bank in Europe, they claim the oldest in the world, was founded in Siena, and it really was a very rich city. It was culturally, economically, politically very important, and won a major battle against Florence in the 13th century to establish its supremacy. But gradually, I think that in the article, I think one of the main reasons that it went downhill was that, unlike Florence, it didn't have an access to a reliable water supply. You know, in those days, water powered just about everything. Florence had a river. Siena is sort of on a hill. It didn't have that. They tried some ingenious ways of bringing water in, but in the end, they just weren't able to sustain their competition, and Florence gradually wore them down. And by the 16th century, Florence had really subdued Siena. And in fact, there's a fort just outside the town that's quite worth seeing. It was built by the Medici family, who, of course, the famous rulers of Florence at that time. And the Sienese they know that it's a beautiful fort, and they put a wonderful wine bar there. They have jazz festivals there. But in a way, they kind of don't like to talk too much about it, because it's a reminder to them of how their city was once great and came under the heel of their hated rival. So it's another example of how, pretty old rivalries and enmities continue to this day.
But they did construct a series of elaborate tunnels that they brought the water in from, I understand.
That's right, they did. And I haven't taken the tour of those, but I understand it is possible to arrange a special tour of those with the local tourist board. I mentioned that they're still used, and one of the best places for Italian ice cream and coffee and pastries, Nannini, which is sort of a famous local cafe, still uses the underground tunnels to cool their fridge. So you see how the medieval technology is still alive.
Still in place. Amazing.
Right.
Now, tell us a little bit about the renowned horse race and how it relates to the Contras.
Right. The Contradas are neighborhoods. There are 17 that were laid out in medieval times. Now, of course, the city's grown very much since then, but these 17 contrade, as they're called, are really like the local neighborhoods that each compete during the palios, which are two horse races. They have one in July and another one in August. They have them every summer. They're run right around the main square of the campo. They clear the square and they put sand down for the racetrack. They draw a lot so that only 10 of the neighborhoods actually get to enter a horse, and then those that miss out get first chance for the second one. But it really is the center of Siena's tradition. I mean, the whole city comes to a stop, and there's such incredible competition among the various neighborhoods to hire the best jockey, get the best horse, and do whatever just about to make sure that they win. It's winning is a great honor, and the neighborhood just goes wild with celebration when they do. And it attracts attention from all over Italy and really the world. It's covered on national Italian television, and the square is packed. I think it can hold at least 50,000 people who just stand in the heat waiting to watch this race. And the race itself maybe only lasts 2 or 3 minutes. I think they go 3 times around the track. Even if a rider is thrown, the competition is quite fierce. There aren't too many rules. And
yeah, I thought that was particularly amusing, that even if he is thrown, and the horse makes it across on its own,
he
wins anyway.
That's right. So they even have a local television channel. I call it All Palio all the time. Whenever I turned it on, they were basically just showing reruns of old palio races dating back to, well, I guess the first, moving pictures in the 1920s. But the race itself has been held annually since the Middle Ages, and it really is a wonderful example of how these... It's not an invented tradition. Of course, it attracts tourists, but this is something that the Sienese really do for themselves, and it's just it's a fascinating insight into it. There's a movie that was made called The Last Victory, which I saw recently, and if any of your listeners get a chance to see it, it's sort of the next best thing to being there, because it really takes you inside a neighborhood and how the competition to win the palio just sort of dominates everyone's attention in the weeks.
Peter, the photographs are incredible. It's a great article. There's obviously it's much more in depth than we've just chatted about.
Just
but
touched on a few things.
Right, we sure have. And those that have access to their computer, if you go to our website, ttrn.com, and go to Destination Worldview, you will find Peter's article in depth. Peter, we've got to run. I thank you once again. It's always a pleasure. And I look forward to the next time we speak.
Me too. Thanks a lot.
Ron. All right. Bye-bye for now. Peter Flaherty, a gentleman, and has some really, really, really good in-depth things in his article, and I think it certainly is worth your while to, if you haven't already, go to it, read it. It's a really good, informative piece. I've got to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to take a little stroll through Santa Monica and San Diego with Suzanne Wright, which should be fun.
Totally gone native. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm back, and we're joined by Suzanne Wright. And Suzanne Wright's going to do a little piece on rediscovering America. And I think it's going to be interesting. For that matter, I think rediscovering anywhere would be interesting with Suzanne. But I must say, Suzanne, in addition to your wonderful writing skills, you're rapidly becoming a great teller of tales.
Uh-huh.
And what are we going to talk about today?
Well, today I thought we could talk about visiting Southern California by foot, getting out of the car.
Sounds good to me. I went with Bob Fisher. They took me up into the Finger Lakes, and boy, I did a lot of footwork up through there. I needed a rest after that one. But
sure.
You're right. Walking through these places is great, and I guess you want to start with Santa Monica.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest, Los Angeles has probably the most car-crazed culture in the country, maybe in the world, I don't know. And so I would be lying if I said it wouldn't be a challenge to tackle the larger Los Angeles area without a car, but one of the, or many of the beachfront communities are easily accessible by foot, and I think you have a very different experience as a visitor to an area when you are at street level.
And of course, you being contrary by nature, your words.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm one of those people who did not get a license until I was 19, and I've lived in several cities around the country where I didn't own a car, and I guess I am a curmudgeon, so I prefer to hoof it if I can.
Me too, especially, I mean, whether, as you've even said, Samoz, whether it's London or we just had Peter Flaherty on, and he said that we did a walk through Siena in Italy, and it's the same thing. You really, when you're out there, you put on a pair of sturdy shoes, as you say, get a smile on your face, and take in the sights.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the beach towns of Southern California, like Santa Monica, which is a great example, have so many fine hotels that are lined and perched right on the ocean. So you can set yourself up there. I set myself up at two sister properties, Shutters and Casa del Mar, and you can throw on your shorts and your sneakers and then head up to the promenade or head over to the pier, which, you know, is, you know, it's Coney Island on the West Coast.
Yeah, well, all I want to do is have some fun when the sun comes up on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Exactly. And, you know, the street performers, I mean, the energy that you feel in the streets that you would not feel if you were encased in steel and glass.
Exactly.
you know, it's palatable, and it's a really enjoyable way, particularly if you're traveling solo, as you know I often do, Roy. It's a particularly fantastic way to, you know, make friends, and even if the friendships last for 30 seconds or, you know, 2 minutes.
And you never see them again in your life, but it was a great moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the blocks in Santa Monica are certainly laid out, as they are in the best cities, for walking.
Right.
There are, you know, wide boulevards, wide sidewalks. There are pedestrian-only sections of the city. The whole 3rd Street Promenade is nothing but for pedestrians, so there aren't any cars. So even if you bring children, it's not an issue. It's very safe and clean and accessible and enjoyable. And, I mean, you can spend hours wandering around.
And, of course, you have the famous pier.
You have the famous pier with what's got to be the best roller coaster ride in the country. Right over the water, a
yep.
tremendous Ferris wheel. And it's a bargain. It's an absolute bargain, and it's a true melting pot because it's where you see folks from, you know, every walk of life, every hue, shape, and size, and age are milling about, eating cotton candy, and it sounds kind of corny to say, but it's a little wholesome.
And you have a lovely beach right there.
And you have a beautiful beach.
I mean, I even went clamming there one time.
Yeah,
they exactly. told me, well, I was from the East Coast. I didn't get you show me water, and I'll find you clams. And I found this small little clam, and the fellow that was standing next to me turned around to me and said, "Listen there, son. If you don't throw that back, you're going to get arrested for statutory clamming." So it wasn't a very big clam, but I did get one.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's interesting because a lot of folks have the idea that, you know, it would be a great thing to, you know, rent a bike or rent a scooter. But I'll tell you what, I think it just gets in the way.
Yep.
You know?
And then you have to worry about it where you park it. Do you have somebody to take it? Nobody's going to steal your shoes unless you, you know, leave them too far away, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I tell you what, if you take a lot of walking vacations, even if you don't consider yourself, you know, a quote-unquote hiker or, you know, a super enthusiast, athletic enthusiast, it's a good excuse to invest in good quality shoes and,
right.
and allows you to, you know, buy great footwear wherever you are. In fact, while I was in Santa Monica, I managed to pick up a really ingenious invention, a pair of Brazilian surf sandals, which...
Oh, nice.
Are differentiated from flip-flops only in that they have a strap around the back of the heel.
Huh.
But that makes them all the more comfortable for long periods of walking.
Well, very interesting.
So, yeah.
Huh. Now, you probably didn't stop for a margarita or anything, did you?
Well, you know, it's very important to stay hydrated, Roy.
Of course.
When you are walking.
Of course.
And in addition to carrying your water bottle, you know, you must partake in all that...
The local libations, yeah.
All that sunny Southern California has to offer in the way of fresh fruit drinks, sometimes spiked with alcohol.
Exactly. I mean, in fact, I introduced Bob Fisher to his first margarita some time ago on a 14-hour train ride. Now,
well,
so you did Santa Monica, and you stayed
Santa
at the Shutters, and then you went and you went. You did the historic Main Street part of,
right.
of that area, which
That's
is always
right.
fun.
A lot of
Hard bodies.
A lot of hard bodies. It's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing. Coming from the East Coast, I find it amusing that there are so many donut shops.
Yeah.
In Southern California, and yet every single body that you see is incredibly fit and toned and great looking, no matter whether they're 70 or 17, male or female.
Well, they also have a lot of cosmetic surgeons out there as well.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. By and large, California has always maintained this healthy attitude you know, all of these health food restaurants and. But, yeah, I don't know about the donuts.
And they must be walking a lot. I think that's the key.
That's it.
That's
the answer.
They're walking while they're eating their donuts. So
after you left after you left Santa Monica, mm-hmm. you went to one of my favorite places, which is San Diego.
Oh.
I think if one could choose wherever they wanted to live in the world, San Diego would have to be one of them. One, as you mentioned in your article, not only the beauty, but the weather is incredible.
Oh, it's got to be the best in the country.
Yeah, I would say.
You know, it's interesting. San Diego is, of course, the birthplace of California, and
I had never thought of it that way. Funny enough, until I read your article.
Yeah, you know, and it's got a real pioneering spirit. There's a real can-do. You know, we've put our stake in the ground, and we continue to improve our lot. Kind of feeling there, and I had no idea just how populous San Diego was because. It is a truly sprawling city. I think it's the seventh largest city in the country.
Well, you know, they have the whole county. They call the part that I lived in was Carter by the Sea, and they call that all North County. And from the Marine Base,
mm-hmm.
All the way down to the old city, is San Diego, and
mm-hmm.
of course it's quite spread out. But the parts that you mention in your article, such as the Gaslamp. A district and all of that is just absolutely beautiful.
They have done a tremendous job in San Diego.
In the restoration,
revitalizing what used to be a very drug-infested, unsafe, unappealing, undesirable neighborhood, a no-man's land, if you will, into an absolutely inviting tourism district. It is the anchor of the downtown area. You cannot ask for a more vibrant spot to set your things while you're exploring by foot.
All right. Well, it went from an old Navy town into, what's become a very cosmopolitan and very lovely area, such as, of course, then you wandered off into, there's Old Town, of
mm-hmm.
course, and then you went along to the Maritime Museum. But I think the diamond of the whole area, as you bring out in your article, is Balboa Park.
Oh, magnificent collection, probably unrivaled in the U.S. and possibly globally. A collection of museums in a beautiful urban forest and totally accessible if not by foot. You can get there in public transit or in one of the private trolleys, which are very affordable, and
mm-hmm.
I talk a little bit about those in my article. You can explore on your own. You can go anywhere from the San Diego Zoo, which is the best in the world, to, you know, the Mingay Museum, which has Indonesian and Asian art collection, to natural history, to science. There's children's museums, and it's mind-blowingly beautiful to walk from, you know, one collection of artifacts to the next. I mean, you could spend literally days in this setting.
Right, and I think what most people or many don't know, and you pointed out in your article, that it was originally the site of the 1915-1916 Panama California Expedition, and it covers about 1,200 acres.
So there's some incredible architecture, Roy.
Exactly.
That exists, some Spanish-style, mission-style architecture that
right.
was erected for the exhibition itself. And used now in performing spaces where they house local theaters and local symphonies and things like that. It is a beautifully well-kept, I sometimes think secret, because you're right, a lot of people assume San Diego, they spend a lot of time at the beaches, and they don't get to this amazing collection of museums. But it'll blow your mind. It's not what a quote-unquote museum is. Maybe you could liken it to the Smithsonian, but on a much larger scale.
And you skipped the San Diego Zoo, which you've probably been to before, but I think it's one of the most beautiful zoos in the country, actually.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If this had been my first trip to San Diego, I would not skip the zoo. But
right.
because I had been before, I wanted to make a point to visit.
Yeah, lunch at the Prado might be better.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to make a point to see some of the institutions I hadn't seen before.
Right.
But let's be honest, I think the kid in us loves the San Diego Zoo, and there's always something new to see there. It is their number one attraction.
Well, how was lunch?
Well, they have a wonder. You know, here's the thing about a world-class collection of museums. You know there's going to be a world-class restaurant, and Roy knows from our talks previously that I really have a bent and a focus on cuisine, and this is a fantastic restaurant that has a wonderful sort of Mediterranean-influenced menu, Pisco Sour, which is one of the national drinks of Peru, and a wonderful sort of wild Gaudi-esque interior with a whole riotous collection of blown art glass, and it's just happy making. I felt like I was in Barcelona, so it was wonderful.
Suzanne, great article, and we encourage those who have access to their computer to go online and go to our website, where you can look at these wonderful photographs that are up there and read Suzanne's article in depth. Suzanne, I thank you once again. It's always a pleasure, and I look forward to the next one.
Me too. So get out of your cars. Walk these cities.
That's it. Tell them. Get them out there.
Suzanne. Save some fuel with the gas prices.
That's right.
All right. Take care, Roy.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now. Suzanne Wright, it's always a pleasure, and she does get around. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, Johnny Jett's going to be with us. So hang in there, and be right with you.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, I'm back, and we're joined by Johnny Jett. Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm terrific. And did you say you were just down this area?
Yeah, I just got back from Florida last night.
Where were you?
I was in Jupiter Beach, staying at the new Jupiter Beach Resort.
Yeah. That's our buddies, right?
Yeah.
In fact, we did a spot for them on Wheel of Fortune. How is the? I was a little bit worried about their property.
You know, I flew into Fort Lauderdale because it's only nonstop from L.A.
Yeah.
You can't fly into West Palm nonstop.
Right.
And driving that hour to Jupiter, it looked like a tornado hit the place, which basically did.
Yeah.
I mean, billboards were down on the street. All the trees were basically down or either, you know, sideways.
Well, and the thing is that they were hit the last time they had a lot of damage. I don't know if it was Charlie or which one it was, but I know
not Andrew. They said this was the worst one they've ever seen.
Yeah, I wondered if it affected their property down in Hollywood Beach.
No, I guess it didn't. I didn't see the Hollywood Beach one, but the Jupiter Beach,
yeah.
They did a great job cleaning up in 1 week's time.
Yeah, I know, because my daughter lives down that way, and they've just gotten phone service back last week.
My sister lives right down there. She just got electricity last week.
Yeah, exactly. Some of them have been out for quite some time. In fact, I called.
The ocean, you know, is all still dirty and murky.
Yeah.
It's not like the, you know, the Florida that you picture.
Well, I tried to get a hold of Chuck, and I haven't been able to reach him because I wanted to see how they fared down there, and because he lives in Boca, I believe.
Right. Yeah, he just got his electricity too.
Did you see? Okay. Did you saw him while you're at the property?
Oh yeah.
Okay. And Kerry?
Yep, I had lunch with him yesterday.
Okay, so they're all okay, are they?
Yeah, they're all fine.
Were you just down there for a visit, or did they have some?
I went to go see my sister, and then I spent a few nights at the hotel to see how that is. And, you know, they have a spa, they have like six spas, and I had one of the most incredible massages.
Ah.
Deep tissue.
Wow, very interesting.
And they also gave me a facial, which I'm not a big fan of facials.
Well, that may maybe take the red out of mine sometimes, you know. But I, when we went to the opening of the Marriott, they gave us a little gift bag, and in that bag were those big, lovely, heavy, beautiful bathrobes that they have.
It's so funny because they just gave me a robe.
The one from Jupiter?
From Jupiter.
Okay, so they have them as well. And the interesting part about those robes, listen to us going on about this, is that, you know, the terry cloth on the inside, but they have almost like a velvet feel to the outside.
Velvet, yeah.
Really lovely. And that was certainly a nice gift to receive because you can't have the maids all over the world talking about you because they can't find their best robes. Johnny, last time we spoke, we were talking about Japan, and we never really got to finish Kyoto, and it's a place that I have never been, and it's quite an ancient city with a 1,200-year history, and it was established, of course, as you know, as Japan's capital under the name of Hayako. Is that the way you say that?
You know, I can barely say arigato.
Well, in any event, walk us through that a little bit, because
they say if you're going to go to Japan, the one place that you should not miss is Kyoto, because it was spared from the bombs of World War II, and it has the most, like, temples, shrines, imperial palaces.
And it was the capital city, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it was the capital city. It's the seventh largest city in Japan now, and I was thinking that it was going to be like this little small town.
Right.
Places, monsters, like New York City. I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't either.
There's 1.5 million people living there.
Good Lord.
So when you see pictures of Kyoto, you see all these, like, you know, trees, and it's really a city. On the outside is where you find, or in, you know, in the city, you find these little gems, these gardens and palaces.
Yeah, how about the Imperial Palace? Did you get over to it?
You know, I went to the Imperial Palace. You can't go inside of that one. But it's massive.
Yeah.
Or at least you couldn't go inside the time we were there. Maybe it was closed that day. But I walked around it, and it was, you know, it's this rock driveway. And it goes all the way around. It must have been like
right.
A quarter mile.
So, yeah, it's a large property.
And then, but I did go to the Golden Palace.
Uh-huh.
And that was amazing. You're not allowed inside that building either. And that's been closed since, like, I think it burned down in the 50s. I haven't done my story yet, so excuse my backstory.
Because, it's interesting. I went to your site, and I know you had mentioned Kyoto, and then we said we were going to chat about it. Then when I went to your site to look at your archives of newsletters, I couldn't find it, and I thought...
Yeah, because I haven't written it. It takes me a long time to write these articles.
Well, you've got a lot of stuff out there.
And when I write, they're not short. I mean, I write every detail, which is, you know.
I know.
Love it or hate it.
Well, that's what, you know, I love it because it takes you step by step by step. As I said to you, and it wasn't just to pat you on the back, but when I read your story about Niagara, where we were at the same time,
right.
I said, you know, and in fact, I even mentioned it to Bob Fisher. I said, you know, he's taken us every step of everything we did, except we didn't go on the Wet and Wild tour or the slightly Wet and Wild. But Johnny just walks you right through every bit of it. And I think that's what people like. That's what they want to hear. That's what we kind of do that here. We get a little bit more in depth on with some of the travel journalists, obviously. But I think that's important.
Well, it's kind of like a virtual vacation for some people.
Exactly, with photos as well, you know.
But a lot of people, you know, they don't have time. They're always rushing, and I'm the same way. I'm always rushing. Like, I don't have time to read these long stories, even though I write them.
Right.
If I wasn't writing them, I don't know if I'd have time.
Yeah,
to
you
read.
Wouldn't. Yeah, you wouldn't.
So
know
I'm trying to do. I'm going to try and do both. Like, I'm going to do like a quick outline, and then for people who want to have these long stories, because, you know, I want to have. You know, I'm trying to make everyone happy, which is basically impossible.
Well, but what's also important is keeping yourself happy. You know, if you're comfortable with what you're doing, and how we feel about this show. You know, do you do flash and trash because people just want to know certain things, or do you get into some in-depth stuff that you don't want to lose the flash and trash audience, so to speak? And but on the other hand, there's a lot of information that you don't get with all of these websites that are out there, and that is an in-depth story or a blow-by-blow, foot-by-foot, hand-by-hand, as you tell them, information. And I think that people have time. They spend a lot of time on the web.
Yeah, and I started doing the videos, which makes it a little bit quicker for people who don't have time. They could just watch a video. It's a 2-minute video. And
I like the videos. Are you still you're doing that with your still camera, right?
Yeah, but you know, I can shoot, you know, 5-minute videos if I want, but I usually break them down to 2 minutes. I'll send you a couple ones on Japan. They're actually in my archive section. I think the one in Kyoto is the best one of them all.
And
it really gives you
you seem to be getting fairly decent quality out of it.
Yeah, well, I got this camera. It's a Coolpix Nikon 7.1 megapixels, which is a lot. And I bought it for like $300.
Wow.
And I have a, you know, I went, what costs a lot of money is the card.
The memory cards, yeah.
It costs about, but you can get them on eBay. I have like a half a gig in mine. And it costs about $70 or $50.
So let's just see. We're we covered a little bit of Kyoto. Well, let's just go on from there. Where have you been? You went down to Florida.
Yep. Well, from Kyoto I went to Tokyo, and then I spent a couple days there, and the hay fever was really bad.
I got
out of there and flew back home, rested up, and then just flew to Florida not even a week ago. Actually, you know what? You remember that conference we went to in Niagara Falls?
Yes.
They had the same one here in L.A.
But for the
European Tourism Commission.
But it was it the TMS?
No, it's called UMEX.
Oh. Huh. That would have... Did you go?
I didn't find out until 2 days before, so I had to change my flight because I was leaving early in the morning to Florida, so I took the red-eye instead, which I hate taking a red-eye.
Yeah.
But because you wake up, you know, it's only a four-hour flight, or 4 hours and 30 minutes, and you can't really sleep.
Yeah.
And you get there at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly.
You have to start your day.
And you know, try to reacclimate yourself. Yeah,
but
I don't.
That commission, that conference is really good. You should go next year. They have one in New York and one in L.A.
Where they just alternate?
No, they do both. They all went to New York a few days before, and then they flew out to L.A.
Yeah, well,
but it was like 23 different European countries were here, or tourist boards.
Well, that's good. You might just email me the information on that, and I'll.
I sure will.
I'll check it out. So, where are you off to next?
I can't tell you.
I'm
going to Toronto next week to do Tech TV.
Oh, are you? Well, you know, the ESTA conference is on this week up in Toronto. In Toronto. They're in Montreal, I think.
Yeah, I've never been to one of those.
Yeah, I was going to go over to World Travel Mart in London, and I don't know why they had them both at the same time, but I decided it was going to be too cold, so the heck with it.
I went to the World Travel Mart 2 years ago. It's good.
I've been going there for years, and that one and the one in Berlin, ITB.
When's that one?
That one, let's see, that one's in kind of end of February, beginning of March. It's probably the biggest one in the world, Johnny.
Yeah, I heard about that one. I got to go to that.
Yeah, you should do that one if you haven't done it. And plus, Berlin's a fun city.
I heard it. Never been to Berlin.
And too bad you don't drink beer.
I'll drink there.
So anyway, you were down in Florida just for a day or so, huh?
No, I was actually there for almost, you know, 5-6 days. And then I went down to see my sister in Delray.
Right. And so what'd you do while you were down there? Anything? Obviously, you had to eat somewhere and do your usual thing.
Yeah, in Jupiter we went to Jetty's Beach, Jetty's restaurant, which is right on the water. I guess it's really popular. There's like 2-hour waits on Friday and Saturday nights.
Right.
And that was really good food. And then we took a tour around Jupiter Island, which they told me that Jupiter Island is the richest area per capita in the country.
And what's interesting is on one side it's beach, on the other side it's ranches in that. And I'm going to give you an interesting website if I've never given this to you and the listeners as well. It's called the Crew of Jupiter, and it's spelled K-R-E-W-E of Jupiter.com. And there's a gentleman there that's written a book about some friends of his, and they went off on this adventure. You know, it's a fiction story, but I believe there's a lot of truth in some of it. And anyway, they have an interesting website. And
Crew of Jupiter?
K-R-E-W-E.
Oh, E. There we go.
And he lives in Jupiter, and they've invited me to come down and have some drinks. Maybe you go with me one day.
Okay.
Go down and have some drinks in this little bar down there that they have. I can't think of the name of it at the moment, but what there's a place he based part of the story on, And it's a great book. It's a great read. And he had sent me a music clip. I haven't checked the site to see if he's put it up again, but it was like the crew is back in town, you know, based on that the boys are back in town music, but with the lyrics about their travels where they renovated an old flying boat and flew down into the islands. Really, really good story. Good guys, and it'd be fun to get down there and join them one of these days.
I'll check it out.
Got to run. And we'll talk to you a week from now, or 2 weeks from now, I guess.
Yeah, good.
Let's see. We're not going to do Thanksgiving, so I don't know if you're. I think you're scheduled the end of that week. That particular Wednesday, I'm just going to get out of town Thanksgiving week, so we'll probably do a pre-recorded show. But I'll email you and let you know.
But I'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah,
always a pleasure. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Johnny Jett. Always fun. Always good. Always traveling. Now, that brings us to the end of the show, and I was just looking for my list. Bear with me here for a second of who we have on next week. We have Hans Tamamagi and Karen LaPerry and Bonnie Neely, and they'll all have some really good stuff for us. So tune in 11 next Wednesday to the Travel Talk Radio Network, and this is Roy Lowy saying bye till next week. And Talking Travel is brought to you by the Travel Talk Radio Network, broadcast live from Florida's Sun Coast and 24/7 online at ttrn.com. Now back to our regular programming.